UK Wine Show, show number 177. Pedemont with Enrico Rovetto. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show. It's show number 177 for the 9th of October, 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Enrico Rovetto. We find out about Pedemont, or Piemonte, if your pronunciation is more Italian in nature. And on this week's show, we have in the spotlight, we're reviewing the book, A Guide to the Wines of England and Wales. And this week, we're back to our mystery grape. So if you're new to the show, I'm going to give you two short clues during the show, and you have to work out what the grape variety is. So here's the first short clue. Our mystery grape is a native of France, yet it is more prevalent in South Africa, where it's the most planted grape. This white grape is certainly versatile. It goes from producing some of the finest, most age-worthy sweet wines to being responsible for vast amounts of sparkling wine, basic New World Glöggers, and high-quality examples. In South Africa, it's also used as a base for fortified wines and spirits. The variety is marked by flavours of honey, flowers, and damp straw, as well as high acidity, which can be a problem in the Loire's less ripe vintages, but is a bonus in hotter climates. It's a vigorous grower and good resistance to disease and wind, but it does bud early and exposes it to spring frosts, and it does ripen late as well. Okay, that's your mystery grape. Have we pondered about that? Something we don't have to worry about for this year's English harvest is spring frosts. Let's find out about how this year's harvest went. Next up in the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. The harvest is well underway in English vineyards, with producers reporting healthy yields, high sugars and balanced acidity in the grapes. Bob Lindo at Camel Valley says his early ripening varieties, such as Pinot, Reichensteiner and Rondo, are fantastic this year. And Peter Dart at Stanlake Park Wine Estate is reporting similar yields to 2006. Three Choirs in Gloucestershire began harvesting on the 21st of September, with the quality in the early varieties very good, they say. Sugars are extremely high, acids well balanced and yields healthy.
Even though the vintages have not been the best over the last few years, hopefully this year it's going to be much better, and with volumes significantly hit by all the manner of problems such as rain, hail, and even severe flooding, what little wine has been made is drinking well. Well, at least from the top producers anyway. I was tasting Camel Valley Bacchus last night, and apart from some slightly reductive notes when I first opened the 2008 vintage, it drank well and truly stunned a group of city lawyers and the like on its quality. So, I can't wait for a cracking vintage like this year, which will help the English growers restock. It's not so bad for the fizz guys, who have a longer maturation times, but a couple of bad vintages does sure make it tough for the guys selling still wines.
Well, Pancho Campo MW, who we've interviewed for this podcast, has resigned as president of the Spanish Wine Academy after a Madrid journalist discovered an arrest warrant for him on the Interpol website. The warrant relates to a complaint in 2002 brought by a former business partner at a sports and music promotion company that Campo ran in Dubai. The complaint has to do with the fee paid to singer Enrique Iglesias and subsequently led to a one-year custodial sentence. Campo claims he knew nothing about the sentence until it was published in an article in the Dubai newspaper The National on the 19th of September of this year. Campo has also stepped down as director of the Wine Future Rioja conference next month in order to focus on clearing his name. His brother-in-law, Roni Bacay, will replace him as president of the academy.
Such a shame about Pancho. I hope he clears his name fast. I felt inspired after attending the climate change conference in Barcelona last year that he organised. He did some good work. What's the last story, Jane?
The last story is about an independent wine and convenience store chain, Wine Cellar, which has gone into administration. The family-owned company was based in the north of England and owned 170 off-licence and convenience stores under the brands Booze Buster, Simply Drinks and Simply Food and Drinks. Fortunately, 109 of the retail outlets have been sold to Walsall-based drinks distributor EFB Retail. That sale secures around 640 jobs and 60 staff from head office. But the 61 remaining stores have stopped trading, with 320 employees made redundant. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to visit our website 3050.co.uk for these stories in full.
Another off-licence chain fails. It's unlikely to be the last. Threshers have been reported to be investing £10 million of new money to restructure their business in the last couple of weeks. And the recession is hurting a lot of businesses that were struggling against the wall of competition from the supermarkets. Such a shame. Something that's not a shame, in fact, something to be proud of, is the new book, The Wines of England and Wales. And it's the book review this month and the spotlight coming up next. This week's spotlight is looking at the book A Guide to the Wines of England and Wales by Philip William, David Moore and Neville Bletch. At last, he cries, a decent book looking at the English wines. A Guide to the Wines of England and Wales is an almost pocket-sized guide of all things produced by Vitis in England and Wales. It's predominantly about the different wineries, with 183 pages of the 223 pages dedicated to English and Welsh wine producers. In total, there's 100 English wineries and 11 Welsh producers covered, and they're ordered by the county with limited maps but plenty of pictures to go with it. While there's detailed information about each of the wineries, all the vineyards have a key, neatly organised section giving key information about the winery. Not all sections are included in each write-up, but the common sections include key facts, biographies about key personnel, normally it's the owner or the winemaker, and the wines produced, how to find them, and one of my favourite information is on visiting them. After all, many UK vineyards don't have the facilities to deal with visitors, and to know which ones you have to call first to arrange a visit is also quite helpful. Other sections of the book include a brief history of English and Welsh wines and an excellent section on the effects of climate change on viticulture in the UK, written by Professor Richard Seddle. It looks over the last 50 million years and possibly the next 100 years. We know Richard from a few interviews we did with him on climate change in the UK viticultural scene a couple of years ago. In summary, I think this is an excellent book and I'd recommend it to anyone who's interested in English and Welsh wine. The book is small and easy fits into your bag and perfect for trips into the English countryside. It's not as weighty as maybe Stephen Skelton's UK Wine Guide, but it's far more practical for those who want to visit the UK's better producers. In the end, I rated this book 84 out of 100. Now, due to silliness, I've landed up with two copies of the guide, which I obviously don't need. So I'm going to give away a copy to one lucky listener. And I'm going to choose randomly who's going to win next Thursday, that's the 15th of October. To enter, email me with your name, number and physical address as well, and I'll randomly pick one to mail you. While you're writing, if you want to give me some comments about the show, that's always good. And if you've got some constructive criticism, that'd be fantastic as well. Obviously, if you've got some criticism, you're not going to win. No, just kidding. It won't matter what you say, as long as you've got your address, that's the key thing, so I know where to send the book. You can email me at chris.scott@3050.co.uk. That's chris.scott@3050.co.uk. 3050 is THIRTYFIFTY.co.uk. Or alternatively, you can go to our website, 3050.co.uk, and contact me through the Contact Us button. Don't forget to select UK Wine Show as the reason to contact us. And make sure you fill in your address in the comments field so that I know where to send the book. Okay, that pretty much ends the book review and the book giveaway this week. Before we have the interview, though, let's give you the second clue and our mystery grape. In newer wine regions, our mystery grape grows on a wide variety of soils, but French growers prize the calcareous soils, particularly tuffu, of the terrain. In fact, it's terrain as well as Anjou-sur-Mer that are Chenin's bases today in the Loire. Here, wines range from basic and vaguely floral to intense honeyed wines, made either sweet or dry, but always with vibrant acidity. The region's sparklers include Crémant de Loire and Vouvray. While our mystery grape is also grown in New World countries, including Australia and America, mostly California, where it is often blended, it's in South Africa that it gets its name, Steen. That's our last clue. I'll give you the answers to the clues after our interview. This week, as you know, we're talking with Enrico Roberto on Pedemont, the wine region. Let's have a listen to what he has to say. Hi, I'm here with Enrico Ravato. How are you, Enrico?
Yeah, very, very well.
Excellent. We're going to talk a wee bit about Piemonte as a general region and maybe talk a wee bit about the different styles. You know, at the 10,000 feet looking down, what are the big things about Piemonte?
First of all, Piemonte in Italian language means foot, and monte is mountain. So it means that we are close to the mountains. Mm-hmm. So So in the west part, the northern west part, we have all mountains, very high, 3,000, 4,000 meters high. And after that, we have hills. And we are going to the flat, Pianura Padana. But if you speak about vineyards and the wine region in general, we can divide in four areas the Piemonte. There is the area of the north side of Piemonte where always Nebbiolo is grown also over there. It's very interesting. It's called the area of Gattinara, of Lessona, Gemme, Fara, Cizzano. All these wines are made from Nebbiolo grape, but the characteristic is completely different because these Nebbiolos are growing close to the mountains, and the soil is very, very sandy. If you go to visit this place, it's unbelievable. You know, it's raining and you don't get wet. You can walk in the vineyards. For us, it's very strange because here is unbelievable. If it's raining over here, it's like mud, you know?
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of clay. They have a lot of sand. So we, in this part, north part of Piemonte, you will have wines, Nebbiolo, not very full-bodied, but very aromatic.
Yep.
The other side, we consider the Asti region, so where the main grape variety grown over there is the Barbera. There is, of course, there are more sandy soil, but not so sandy like in the north part of Piemonte. We have to consider that this second region that I identified like the Asti region and the Alba region, so the Lange Hills and the Roero Hills, they comes from... I don't know if you understand in English, the alluvionale. So they come from the river.
Yeah,
so alluvial. Alluvious soil. So all our clay is come from old rivers. They were coming from the mountains. In the north part of the Piemonte, they come from the glaciers. So it's totally different.
Yeah.
So Asti region, so we have the Barbera grape, which is the most important part. The soil are sandy, but not so sandy like in the north. So there is a part of limestone, I think it's called. And the third region is, of course, our region, so where we have a lot of clay. You know, the percentage of clay and calcium is unbelievable. So it's a soil is made to have full-bodied and aged wines. But, you know, I come from this area, so I want to be partial and don't speak too much about my region and speak about all the things. There is also the fourth side is the area of the Gavi and the Dolcetto di Ovada. This area is we called the area of close to Acqui. There, of course, the landscape is completely different. It's more flat. The hills are really very rolling. Not like here.
Yeah, they're
very steep. There is more, you know, rolling, and over there you can have a very fruity Dolcetto, for example. They have a sweet wines like the Brachetto, for example. They have the Gavi, which is a white wine, very, very fruity, very, the flavor is very intense. Completely different area. It's a little bit more far. It's close to the Lombardia side. So
yeah.
Also they are also a little bit different. Let's say the true Piemonte is the Torino Asti Alba, that is the real Piemonte, not only for the wine, but also for the kitchen culture, for the tradition of everything, dialect and everything. But if you go more specific, also in this area, in our region, you go 3 kilometers, 4 kilometers, you can find a different soil. So it's very difficult to speak about geologic composition because it's so different from one place to the other place.
Why are the hills in Barolo so steep? How were they formed? Because it's my GPS just went absolutely nuts trying to find you. It kept trying to send me up vineyards through the middle of vineyards.
No, that's a good. No, they are coming, as I told you, from the rivers. So a million of years ago, the forming of these hills is because the river when the seaside was going down, when the sea was going down, there was the much more water than now, of course. Much more river were flowing over here, and the fact that it's so steep is because we have many small valleys, and they formed by the small rivers they were going to down to the lower part of Italy. So for that reason that we have this higher and steep hill, and for that reason also that we have problems also to work the vineyards here. The mechanization of the vineyards, It's very difficult.
But you've got big, wide spacings between the vineyards. I was in Burgundy, and they have a meter spacing between the vineyards, but you've got quite wide spacings here.
We won't go in with the tractors.
Yeah.
Which we try to go in with the tractors, because sometimes when it's raining too much, it's difficult to get in with the tractors. I would like to have the row or shorter, but it's very dangerous. It works, the vineyards, somehow.
Yeah.
And we have to contain the cost somehow. So we cannot, of course, pick the grapes with the machines. That's impossible. We cannot prune with the machines. That's also impossible. We try to do the rest.
Such as spraying?
Spraying or, I don't know, green harvest. Okay, of course, the selection in the vineyards they have to be made by hands anyway. But, you know, I would say the putting the manure in the vineyards, because also there's another very important thing, to use the manure from the mountains. Mm-hmm. But how we can do? Have just to dig a hole in the middle of the vineyards, put inside and close.
Plowed
because
in.
All the other type of system of fertilization are not useful. Because you have to put the manure down, 1 meter down.
Or else it'll roll down the hill.
That's stupid. You know, you give the fertilization to the grass. If you put on the, just at 10 centimeters, roll down first, and second, the grass
grows,
not the vineyards. But of course, we don't want also too much of that, too much of organic substances, because these soils have to be poor for the vineyards. For the high quality wines, we need poor soil.
And we're in the top of the hills between Serra Lunga and Sina. Do you find that you lose a lot of topsoil? Is the soil quite thin up top compared to down the bottom?
The geological composition here, we don't know how deep is this. What I'm saying now. We have some layer of very compact clay, so compact that even the water cannot flow down. And we don't know where this layer are. We can suppose how deep. And that makes a difference, because if this layer is very deep, it's down in underground, we have more erosion. If it's higher, we have less erosion, because this is like cement, like beton, it's like cement. So the hill is stable. But I don't like so much when it's too high, because the roots of our vineyards, they are not breathing, let's say. Because there's not enough space between oxygenation,
exactly.
And we have a problem is that when it's raining too much, this water accumulation of the water is so big when there is this layer is too high, and we have a landsliding. So there is positive and negative.
You said earlier that there was a lot of limestone. Was it limestone or
limestone is more in the Asti region. Here only clay and calcium.
Calcium, what's the calcium?
Calcium is a Ca.
But normally calcium comes from marine animals.
Here was seasand everywhere in these areas, of course. And so this comes from this, but calcium is this area in particular. If you go in Asti region, you don't find so much.
In Barolo, the rivers carved out these different hills. When I've looked at maps of Barolo, normally the Barolo grape varieties are grown on the south side, or maybe
south, east,
west,
well, also sometimes west.
But never north.
No, it's not allowed.
But there's grapes grown on northern slopes here, I think.
You can find something, but not so much.
Not Nebbiolo.
You can find some, maybe Barbera or not Dolcetto. Or for example, the only one slope that I have north, we have the white wine. That's because we need acidity and we are not allowed to put any other grape. Maybe Barbera sometimes, but
not very often.
Not usually. Here, if you look around the north exposure, or you have white grapes or you have hazelnuts. Because we don't have olive trees, unfortunately.
Why not olive trees?
Because here in the winter it's cold. It's snowing.
And
olive trees, they don't like cold winter. In fact, if you see the olive trees, they are in Tuscany, that is warmer. They are on the seaside. They are around lakes. We don't have lakes, we don't have seaside, and we are too north. So
okay.
That's our negative point. We don't have olive trees.
Apart from the wines of Barolo, ignoring them, what's your favorite wine from Piemont?
Good question. I think that Barbera is one of the most interesting wines. Of course, the Barbera, you can find so many different Barbera in all over the Piemonte, but I think a good Barbera with a good structure can be sometimes also aged, sometimes can really, in Italian language, here in our region, we say barolleggiante. It means that some Barbera aged are very similar to some Barolos. And we say that this Barbera barolleggia. It means it seems like a Barolo. It's not, but it seems. Because
so your favorite wine is the closest to a Barolo?
Yeah. Not always we are so, you know, lucky to have such good Barberas and be close to Barolo, but, you know.
You're not interested in things like Moscato d'Asti or any of that sort of stuff?
Do you want to taste some Moscato?
Do you have...
Yes, very small production, but we have. Do you want?
Yeah, I would. Because I think Moscato is the Moscato d'Asti is the wine to have with curries.
It's not exactly the region of Moscato, for that reason that this Moscato I produce with my school friend, that is come from the Calosso side, so the Asti side. But we are keeping, because we need to have a wider range, because it's nice, it's pleasant, this Moscato. And, you know, I'm an enologist, and in my school we had all the students were producer or son of producer, and so we find an agreement with my friend, and we do in his cellars also, because to produce Moscato there is a high technology. We have to spend a lot of money on filtrations, on a fridge and special tanks and everything. So Moscato is very fresh, pleasant.
Yeah, it's nice. It's quite sherbety.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's nice.
Of course, 5% of alcohol.
Yeah. So you can drink it.
It's nice for this weather, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think Moscato is probably one of the great varieties. A lot of people that goes really well with curries, because you've got the low alcohol, so you don't get the heating effect. You normally, it doesn't have as much acidity as normal, but you've got bubbles and acidity that sort of help, and the sweetness takes away the heat as well. So if you're ever having
we take shower with Moscato in this area usually. Because it's not so much alcohol, so we can use like water, you know. No, I mean, I'm saying that because Moscato is a wine that even the children, when I was 6 years old, 7 years old, my father, you know, put the finger in the Moscato, and I just taste the Moscato. Ah, it's good. And that was the first approach to the wine. Mm-hmm. That's at this age with Moscato, of course. We don't start with the Barolo at 7 years old. I will not suggest you that, but Moscato, everybody likes. Of course, there are good Moscato, bad Moscatos, but generally speaking, that's the first wine. If you never taste wines, that's the first wine that you are going to enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, then, Enrico, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks to you.
Cheers, mate.
Wow. That finishes off talking with Enrico. I think it's been 3 shows now that we've had with him. I've hoped you enjoyed them all. It's quite good learning with about Barolo, Nebbiolo and Piedmont. One thing I noticed about Barolo when I was there was that they make a lot more wines than just Nebbiolo, which is what we normally associate with the Barolo name, so to speak. They also make some whites, as we talked about in the first show a couple of weeks ago. When I asked Enrico why they have these different wines rather than focusing on Nebbiolo and Barolo, Enrico said it's because they want to offer a range of products to visitors. So they're trying to go out with tourism, but I also think not all the area in the Barolo region is suitable for the Nebbiolo grape. So they're probably just doing a bit of diversification where the soils and climate are suitable. Okay, I think we're almost ready to finish up now. First of all, before we do, let's have a mystery grape variety. As you know, it was Chenin Blanc, a versatile and often underrated variety. Let's have the clues again. Chenin Blanc is a native of France, or more specifically the Loire, yet it's more prevalent in South Africa, where it's the most planted grape variety. The white grape is certainly versatile. It goes producing some of the most finest age-worthy sweet wines, to being responsible for vast amounts of sparkling wine, basic New World Gluggers, and high-quality examples. In South Africa, it's also used for fortifying wines and spirits. The variety is marked with flavours of honey, flour and damp straw, as well as high acidity, which can be a problem in the Loire, where less ripe vintages, but a bonus in hotter climates. It's also a vigorous grower and has good resistance to disease and wind. But on the negative side, it does bud early, which exposes it to spring frosts, and it is a late ripener as well. In newer regions, it's grown on a variety of soils, but the French growers prize their calcareous soils, particularly tofu of the terrain. In fact, it's terrain as well as Anjou-sur-Mer that is Chenin's base in the Loire Valley. Here, wines range from basic and vaguely floral to intense honeyed wines made either sweet or semi-sweet, all with vibrant acidity. The region's Chenin sparklers include Sumer, Cremant de Loire, and Vouvray. Chenin Blanc is grown in other New World countries apart from South Africa, including Australia, America, which is mostly California, where it's often blended. Okay, just about to finish up the show this week, but before we do, let's have our quote. This week, it's anonymous, or should I say it's from an anonymous person, but it's a cracker. The older I get, the better I like it. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.